Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right. Football Friday, Joey Harrington, 5:30, story time with Joey, whatever you want to call it.
Well, story time with Joey will come after Football Friday. We only have so many Football Fridays left.
Okay, yeah, right, two or three.
Yeah, right, and then we're, you know, that
Super Bowl.
We can't say that.
Yeah, you can.
Big game.
Super Bowl.
Michael Buffer is going to come and fire you.
Joe, Alabama won again, so that's cool.
Oh... Did you watch?
I did.
Sort of.
Did you?
I watched the whole thing.
I ended up watching most of it. I thought it was funny. And maybe this is just me, but you know, it wasn't the hype that, you know, it has had in years past. But, you know, all in the pregame, they had everybody's predictions, like the expert predictions and the former player predictions and the celebrity predictions. And everybody had it like 42-40 Alabama or 35-31 Ohio State. Was it just me or was it kind of fooling themselves? When I looked at that, I was like, no, this is going to be like 50-20. Like this is going to be an Alabama drubbing. And not necessarily in like the, right from the start, but I just didn't see any way that I don't say untested, but look, Ohio State only played what, 7 games?
Yeah, yeah.
They had a quarterback with
7
busted up ribs.
Maybe 8.
Their half their team was COVID positive a couple days before the game, and you're looking at an Alabama team with 2 Heisman finalists, 1 winner, a Biletnikoff, a laundry list of NFL players, and they hadn't really. I think it's fair to say they hadn't really been tested. I mean, Florida was a close game that they ended up winning. But, I mean, this was about as dominant a season as Alabama had. And granted, the scope of college football was completely different this year. But I don't know. Maybe I was in the minority, but this one didn't surprise me. And, you know, I guess you could have turned this on and seen Alabama with 50 points.
Yeah, it's weird in that I thought Alabama was going to win. I was of the mindset, though, that I thought Ohio State could keep it close. The fun stat that I kept throwing out there is, and this just goes to say something about Ohio State, I think it was over 10 or 11 years, Ohio State had only been an underdog 8 times, and they were 7-1 straight up in those games. So it's funny. It's like with Clemson, right, or Ohio State, and I know Alabama is the best program by leaps and bounds, but you know the last time Ohio State was a double-digit dog to Alabama, that was the year they beat Oregon in the national title game. They knocked them off for their third-string quarterback. So it's, to me, while Alabama is by far the 800-pound gorilla, I just don't dismiss the Ohio States and the Clemsons of the world. I always think they are in it. And then, you know, about halfway through the game, you're like, oh, well, Alabama is that much better this year.
It's not dismissing anyone. It's just that Alabama is that good.
Yeah.
They're just that good.
And exactly. I don't think it's dismissing anybody. It's just acknowledging the reality of the season that, you know, it truly takes. It takes, you know, you remember those years where you really didn't hit your stride until like week 6 or 7. And for Ohio State, that's the end of the year. And, you know, to paraphrase, who was it? It wasn't Paul Pierce, but I'm thinking, you know, Larry Bird and coming through that door. Eddie George and coming through that locker room door, right? You know, you got a busted up quarterback. You got half the team out with COVID and you're playing Alabama. There's no savior coming into that locker room.
So Urban Meyer's headed to the NFL, kind of interesting. I know We've talked multiple times about you having played for Saban and you...
Petrino.
You were in the Petrino era, which was short-lived.
Yes, it was.
What is,
all 9 months.
Yeah, right. What is the biggest adjustment that Urban Meyer's in for?
I think it is the fact that NFL players, and this has changed a little bit, and I think rightly so, but, you know, 15 years ago, NFL players had a voice, right? They had opinions. They had expertise. And so it wasn't like Nick Saban walking into a 16, 17-year-old kid's living room and saying to their mom and dad, I'm going to take care of your son for the next 5 years. And when you get here, you fall in line and you do what we do because I've got the magic formula. And if you don't do it, well, I got 20 other guys coming in next year that are going to try and take your spot. In the NFL, you know, I tell you the story when I walked into the huddle for the first time, you know, and looked around, you know, my right guard was Ray Brown, who turned 40 years old that year. Ray was a grown man. You know, Bill Schrader came over from the Packers at 30, 34, 35 years old. Bill was a grown man. And so to think that a lot of coaches make the mistake that their way is the only way because I had success in college and this is how you do it. And they fail to realize that they're in a locker room or in a work environment where other people have had success as well. And frankly, other people have had success in an arena that is, I won't say more difficult to have success, but, you know, when you're a college football player, you are of the... you know, 5 to 10% best in the world, right? When you're an NFL player, you are one of the 32 best in the world at what you do. And so to come into a locker room full of grown men who've been the best in the world at what they have done for a very long time and have had success doing so, a lot of college coaches fail to recognize their opinions and fail to recognize that there's more than one way to win games. And while it's important to establish a locker room identity and establish a way of doing things, it's also important to acknowledge that, you know, these are adults who can make adult decisions as well.
I got to know Randy McDaniel pretty well, who's one of the best guards of all time, also probably has the worst stance in the history of an NFL offensive lineman. And I asked him once, I said, how long did you have to listen to people telling you how to change your stance? And he kind of laughed and he goes, for the first 4 or 5 years, it was about a week before I could just, you know, I would look at people and just stare them down. And he said, after like 7 Pro Bowls, he goes, no one says anything to you after that. And now it's, you know, to try to tell, like you said, you know, a Pro Bowler. Were you there? There was a great story in Miami about Zach Thomas giving it to Nick Saban in practice because he didn't want to hear any of this college rah-rah crap. Were you there for that?
I wasn't there that year. That was the year before I got there. That was Nick's first year. I was there for Nick's last. Yeah. But I could absolutely see it. And there was a respect between Jason Taylor and Nick Saban when I got there.
Yeah.
There was a respect between Zach Thomas and Nick Saban when I got there, to the point that when Dante Culpepper decided to go, what's the word I'm looking? Decided to get very angry and charge at Nick. Jason and Zach were the ones who stepped in front,
yeah.
And they were the ones who held Pep back, and they were the ones who respected Nick because I think he. You know, and we weren't hugely successful by any means. I mean, I think we were in the playoff hunt until about week, you know, 15, and then finishing like 7-9 or something. But they respected Nick, and there's a reason that he has been so successful.
Yeah, it's funny. I just, the first time, I don't know if you remember this, you know, when you were in Detroit, but the first time I ever saw an NFL player basically tell the head coach or position coach to kiss his ass, it was a real... I was like, what? Like, what is happening here? Like, I got to Denver and it was like Terrell Davis and Bill Romanowski and Chester McLaughlin. And to see these guys just not care. I was like, you can do that? Like, what's happening? It was it melted my brain for like about 3 weeks listening to people that just didn't care.
And it's interesting. I think part of my downfall is too harsh of a word, but part of my inability to fully adjust to the NFL style or NFL coaching style was I came into that arena looking for that type of help, right? Looking for that help with my stance, right? I had a pretty big hitch in my throwing motion for about, you know, my first 4 years in college, even through my junior year when I'd had some success sophomore junior, and Tedford and I worked day and night to fix this thing and make it something that was, it became habit. But as I got to the NFL and didn't have somebody on me telling me to fix my throwing motion, you know, because guys are scared. Coaches are scared to do it. You have two sides. You have the college coaches who come in and try and domineer and try and tell everybody what to do. And then you have those NFL guys that are simply just trying to cover their own butt, right, who are trying to just last as long as they possibly can and not rock the – and so I was asking for that help. I'm like, look, hey, when I shift my feet and have to go to my second or third look, the ball drops and my release slows down. Let's work on this. But nobody would take that up because they had, honestly, the other side of the perspective, which is I'm not going to screw with that because, that's on him. That's on him to do it. He's gotten himself here with that throwing motion so far, and I'm not going to try and screw it up, even though I was plainly asking for it.
Hmm. This is the great Joey Harrington. Yeah, it's interesting. I would think that the best coaches are the ones that have the ability to recognize that you do need that, while Dante Culpepper may not. You know, I mean, that's it. That's what it is. Like Bobby Petrino, it seems to me, he knows a lot about football. All these guys can coach the X's and O's. It's more to me when you get to the head coach level, it just seems, and please tell me if I'm wrong, it just seems like it's more about being able to relate to people and get the most out of people. More leadership than it is X's and O's.
It's under, I don't want to say it's understanding how to communicate, but and I know I feel like I say this a lot. I know that I've told you this story before. When Petrino was installing his offense, and we were just hammering and hammering and hammering, and we got through about week two or three, and we would practice everything under the sun out of this playbook, and we took the approach of practice it one time, practice everything one time. And then we got to the game and we'd run the same five or six plays over and over and over and over. And a lot of the guys came to me as the quarterback to say, hey, look, can you talk to Bobby about this? Can you talk to Petrino? Because right now we are a jack of spades and a master of none, right? We can just kind of get by with a lot of stuff. But when it comes down to it, if these are the plays we're going to run, I mean, let's run them. Let's figure out how to do it best. Let's figure out how to adapt, how to adjust, how to off of this core group of stuff. So I took that idea. I took those thoughts to Petrino, and we sat down and probably had a great 30, 45 minute meeting and went through the whole game plan. And it was like, hey, well, good. And let's take this out. Okay. And he was seemed to be receptive, and we can take this out and we can take this out. And great. Let's focus on these things. I drove home and got, you know, thought we had a great meeting and went to bed, get into the facility the next day. And it's early in the morning, 6:37 o'clock. And Hugh Jackson, who was our coordinator, and Bill Musgrave, our quarterback coach, are in the room. And I, hey, good morning, guys. And they both just looked weary. I was like, what is going on? He said, and Hugh said, hey, by chance, did you talk to Petrino last night? I was like, yeah, we had a great conversation. I talked to him about this, and these are the things that the guys were telling me, and they both just kind of hung their heads. I was like, what happened? He said, after you left, Bobby came down to the offensive room, closed the door, and screamed, why the hell doesn't our quarterback know what's going on in our offense? And so not only did he put every play back into the offense that we'd just taken out, but he put like another 25 to 30 on top of it. So they said we were up all night trying to make, trying to put new installs in and putting new diagrams. And we got about 2 hours of sleep. And I just kind of hung my head and just like, what in the world is going on?
Yeah.
Someone dared to challenge what he wanted to do, and so he had to punish the rest of the coaching staff.
And I can't believe it didn't work out there.
What an ego.
What a shocker.
It's crazy. You know what the breaking news of this segment, though, was? Dante Culpepper almost killed Nick Saban.
I told you that story before.
I don't think so.
Oh.
I don't remember that.
And I don't think that would be
that we're going to commercial with.
Yeah.
Breaking news. It wouldn't have been much of a fight either. Culpepper seemed like a fairly large individual.
Saban's lucky to be alive.
Yes, he is.
Did you see any
Jason Taylor and Zach Thomas?
Yeah. Did you see any other players almost kill coaches?
I saw coaches almost kill players.
Ooh.
Yeah, that was Charles Haley though.
Yeah.
Oh,
no.
Yeah.
You know, there's great stories about Charles Haley. It sounds like there's always one guy in a locker room full of men. There's always one that everyone's afraid of. And I've universally heard that Charles Haley was the man that everyone feared.
Yeah. My kidneys still haven't recovered. Every time I'd walk by him in the hallways, he would grab me, he'd turn me around, and he'd punch me in the kidney, and he'd laugh, and he'd keep walking.
Well, there's a great Charles Haley story about when the Emmitt Smith was holding out for the Cowboys. They went and won the Super Bowl that year, but he missed like the first two games and they went 0-2. And I guess Charles Haley came off the field in front of Jerry Jones and lost it and started punching holes in walls and basically telling Jerry Jones that if he didn't sign Emmitt Smith, he was going to murder him. And it got Jerry Jones's attention because they signed him the next week and they went on and won the Super Bowl. But like in that Cowboys book, it was Jeff Perlman's. They talk about people that were there said it was like the scariest moment they had ever seen. And they thought Charles Haley was going to murder Jerry Jones.
Jeez.
I believe it. Yeah. Let me know if you want the full Culpepper story, because I swear I've told it to you. So maybe that's a story time for Joey thing.
There you go.
Or maybe next.
We'll see. It's a choose your own adventure.
I do want to talk about how on earth Tom Brady looks better at 43 than 42. We'll get to some of the divisional weekend action with Joey Harrington coming up next on The Fan. All right, Joey Harrington back with us here on The Fan. One more segment before we turn it over to the club. Now, do you want to tell the Dante Culpepper almost killing Nick Saban story, or shall we save it? It's up to you. Choose your own adventure.
I don't know the relevance that it has right now.
Okay. Nick Saban just won another title, so he could, you know, I mean, Dante Culpepper could have stopped Alabama. He's like the only guy that could have stopped Alabama.
Fair enough. Okay, so, you know, so Dante Culpepper came in as the, you know, after tearing his ACL in Minnesota and brought him to Miami. They chose Culpepper over Drew Brees, mind you, because Drew wanted to go to Miami, but they said his shoulder wasn't in good shape. And so they brought Culpepper in, but his rehab wasn't going very well because, you know, I don't want to say he wasn't putting in the effort, but when I got to Miami, he was significantly heavier than he was when I played against him in Minnesota. So they traded for me to be kind of an insurance plan behind Pep. And so Pep played the first couple, and Nick said to me, he's like, look, in a very Saban way, which I respected, I don't care what, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't care what we're paying Dante, I don't care what we're paying you, he's going to take the first reps, and you're going to take the second. If he's better than you, he plays. If you're better than him, you play. You good with that? I was like, hell yeah, that's all I've been looking for. So we get through a couple weeks, and Pep isn't playing too well. And it has to do with his knee, and he's not as mobile as he used to be. And Saban says, look, Pep, if your knee is hurting, take the time to actually get it right. So take this week. Joey's going to take the reps because we have to get him ready to play in case you're not going to go. And he's going to take all the reps this week. And you get yourself ready. And we got to Friday's practice. And, you know, Pep had been sitting out all week, and Coach Saban said Joey's going to take the first reps and you're going to take the second because we need to get him ready to go in case you're not playing. And so in a 10-play period, I'd take the first five, he'd take the second five. We got out to practice and went through all the warm-ups, and I start jogging out, you know, whistle blows, go out to the huddle, and I see this guy running out in front of me. I was like, whoop. Okay, that's Pep. He's going into the huddle. So I just backed off. And Dante goes into the huddle to take the first five reps of practice. And Nick, you know, Pep, get out of there. you know, we talked about this, and he ignored him, and he blows the whistle. Pep, get the hell out. And one more time, you know, some very choice words. And Dante turns around and says, this is my team. You are not going to take me out of this huddle. And he started, you know, and he started moving on Nick. And I was just standing there on the sideline, just looking at this, saying, this is not going to end well. And by God, I'm not getting involved. And so he started moving toward him. He started yelling. He started getting more, you know, hotter and hotter. And pretty soon he starts going into a full-on charge. And Nick Saban, you know, all of 5'7" and 138 pounds with his straw hat and his vest on, and Dante at 6'5", pushing 300, I'd call him about 285, on a full sprint, and he's just standing there, arms crossed, doesn't even flinch. Mm-hmm. And Zach Thomas and Jason Taylor come in and literally, like, clothesline Culpepper on either side, holding him back, and he is probably 3 or 4 feet, arm across, like, pointing in Saban's face, yelling at him, and Nick didn't move.
Wow.
Stone cold, just stone face, just staring him down. And as soon as they pulled him back and he had a moment, he said, Pep, get the hell out of my practice. I don't want to see you again. And Culpepper never practiced the rest of the year.
Damn.
Wow.
How about Saban? No wonder he's won 6 titles or 7 titles.
Gosh. That's some balls right there.
I guess he has no choice. Like, if he ducks and runs,
yeah,
like,
but
you know.
Look, he may have been stone-faced, but I promise you, inside, there was a little like, oh.
Oh, boy.
Oh.
Hold your ground, little Nicky.
I've had to do that a time or two where you pretend to be tough and you're not scared, and in your shoes, you're like, God, if this fight goes down, I'm going to get my ass kicked.
Oh, my God. That is fantastic. Well, sir, we've got some good quarterback matchups. I wonder, you know, Tom Brady's now 43, and he looks better than he did last year. Meanwhile, Drew Brees has a bit of a noodle arm, it seems. What is that? Explain that to me. How does Tom Brady look better now than last year?
Because he's got people around him now. I mean, that was the issue last year, is he had no receivers. I mean, they've been saying it for years, and that's why I keep saying that Tom is the best who's ever done it, is because every single year he had a new cast of characters, right? With the exception of the year that he had Randy Moss and Wes Welker. Name me I won't say above average receiver, but who is it that Tom's had? Deion Branch?
Well, Edelman would be.
Yeah, Edelman. Welker is probably the best one.
Right, but I said besides
Gronk.
The year that he had you know, yeah. Randy Moss and Wes Welker. That was the year they went 8-0, and
yeah.
Boy, they had a stretch. But every single year, it seems like he's playing pretty new, and he has to adjust. It becomes the Gronk show. It becomes Deion Branch. It becomes, not Sony Michelle. James White out of the backfield.
Yeah.
It becomes Deion, a guy from UConn. I can't even remember his name now. I mean, and that's
Lewis,
the point. It's for
right?
Yeah, Deion Lewis, exactly. I mean, for 10 years, Tom's trying to find somebody to play with that, you know, and Julian Edelman's a heck of a receiver, but he's not Randy Moss. He's not Mike Evans. You know, he's not Godwin. He's not the cast that he has, that Tom has to work with in Tampa. And it shows, and it took him a little while to kind of get used to it. It's the COVID year, but look, has had those couple injuries, and Drew's not a big guy, and he's never had the strongest arm, and so I can see that, you know, Drew starts to wear down a little bit. Tom hasn't had that major injury since he tore his ACL, 12 years ago?
Yeah, something like
and
that.
And you put a good cast around him. You put Leonard Fournette and Ronald Jones, and you put all these, you put Gronk backer. I mean, he's got weapons to play with now, and that has just allowed him to be that much better this year than it was last. I mean, he's not a different player. He just has better toys.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, if he can stay healthy, I think they might be better next year. I don't know.
Well, and if you see the way, you know, that his workout stuff, and, you know, whether you agree with his weird, you know, he does the stretching thing or whatever, but
I mean, I saw this. I saw Rod Smith did this. Derek Brooks did this. Shannon Sharp. There are guys that put hundreds of thousands of dollars into their body, and all their meals are professionally made, and they're portioned out. They bring their own food to the practice facility. They never miss workouts. And in a stunning development, the guys that do that tend to hold on for a long, long time. And, you know, that's Tom Brady. His workout stuff is legendary.
Yeah, and when you put that together with some pretty good talent around him, I'd say that puts him right square in the NFC playoffs.
Do you expect? No, let me ask you this: of these three quarterbacks, who do you expect the best performance from, or to surprise you most this weekend? Because we've got the elite guys, but then you've got Jared Goff, Baker Mayfield, or Lamar Jackson.
I think I want to say that's not a fair question. I mean, we talked last week, and you said what's going to the playoff picture going to look like, and I said that it's going to be Tom against Brady or Tom against Aaron in the NFC Championship.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side, all you have, I mean, you've got Pat Mahomes, who's has the experience, but other than that, you got a lot of inexperience. You got a lot of youth. So I guess my point is, I don't think Jared Goff has a chance in hell. I mean, his team, his defense may play great and keep him in it, but coming off a broken finger and not sure who's going to be the quarterback, I cannot possibly see Jared Goff having an explosive performance. I'm not saying they can't win because Aaron Donald is an absolute monster, but it's not going to be a Jared Goff show. I think any one of those AFC guys, whether it's Baker Mayfield or Jackson, I think any of those AFC guys could explode at any moment. Right? That's the fun part about that upcoming class of quarterbacks. And we saw Patrick Mahomes do it first. But there's this, for so long the NFL was afraid to break out of their mold. Right? They were all versions of the West Coast offense. Versions of the power running game, versions of what had always been there, and the run and shoot won't work. Houston tried it once, that doesn't work. That read option stuff, that shotgun stuff, that college football stuff, that isn't going to work. Well, you know what? It does, and it is. And all of those guys in the AFC came from those styles of offense. The fun, explosive, energetic, holy cow, this could be, he could break it on the very next play type of offense. And I think that's what's fun and that's what's great about this next generation of football. And you have four of those guys in the AFC all under, 25?
25,
Baker
yeah.
Mayfield? Yeah, Baker Mayfield's the oldest at 25.
Is he the
oldest?
All
those guys can make, they can all make those plays.
Yeah, it's fun. And you have Cliff Kingsbury and Urban Meyer, head coaches in the NFL. It's different and it's cool. It's fun. Joey, always great to talk to you. Shall we talk to you again next week, sir?
Well, I got a lot going on.
Don't we all?
Between folding laundry and making dinner. The middle part of my day, from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. is spoken for with third grade teaching. I gotten to the point, and tell me if you guys are the same way. I wake up and it's like, oh, okay, here we go. Time to start the day. Let's have a cup of coffee. Ooh, what am I going to make for dinner tonight?
Yeah, it's kind of what it's like.
That's the highlight of the day.
For me,
highlight of the day. It's not like I've got a meeting or I've got to go this place or I've got this thing. It's like, ooh, do I have some sweet potatoes in the fridge? This could get exciting.
That's right. Yeah. My only decision is if I'm going to go hit balls.
That's the big.
Am I going to do that or not?
That tilts it one way or the
other. It depends on the weather.
I understand.
Depends on how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
Yeah.
All right, talk to you.
Your question? Yeah, I guess we'll talk next week.
Yeah, I think we will. All right, see ya.
All right. Bye. See ya.
Joey Harrington's appearances here each Friday brought to you by BMW Portland, where relationships matter. Visit BMW Portland on Southwest Jefferson downtown or BMWPortland.com. The club is next on The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road.
With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.